This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
What's up, y'all? This is Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network. We're going to talk a little bit about unions with our good friend Amanda Griffiths. She's a writer for Young Voices, been published all over the place, even on GoodMorningLiberty.us. So you got this piece out about Starbucks and their union.
Yes.
And we just did a whole episode about some stuff going on with unions yesterday. So I wanted to get your synopsis on the piece, and then I want to talk to you about the libertarian position on this matter.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I'm a good representative of the libertarian position on this matter. If I'm wearing my Rush shirt, by the way, as every good libertarian knows, the band Rush wrote The Trees, so you know that I just wrote an article about unions if I'm wearing my Rush shirt. This article has tons of coffee puns.
Yeah.
And it's called Biden's NLRB Wants to Roast Starbucks Over Labor Allegations, But It's Workers Who Are Getting Burned.
Hmm.
I literally inserted all the coffee puns during my last draft pass, and I thought my editors were going to take them out, and they did not.
Oh, no, they love that stuff.
No. Oh, crap. Yeah. So this takes on the issue of union decertification, which is a kind of in-the-weeds phrase. Essentially what it means is that when a union has been authorized to act as a group of workers' bargaining representative, right? So been effectively in play for a year, but a first contract hasn't been reached, what workers can do is they can file something called a decertification petition. It's sort of like an exit break for workers. It's a protective mechanism for them. They don't like the way that things are going. What they can do is say, we actually don't want this union here anymore. We want another mode of bargaining. Maybe we want to represent ourselves. Maybe we just want to find another union, anything like that. They'll file a decertification petition. In theory, what that does is that then kickstarts the decertification election process. It's a democratic process. The workers vote on whether they want to keep the union or not. But there's been a series of changes in labor policy that allows the National Labor Relations Board to just cut any decertification petition off of the pass. Unions can file what are called blocking charges if they don't like the fact that a group of workers has filed a decertification petition, and they can alert the NLRB. And if the NLRB says, or if the NLRB basically decides at its discretion, okay, we are going to accept these blocking charges, decertification process is over. And they need to have cause, but there's no oversight as to whether this cause is legit. So the charitable read in Starbucks' case is that Starbucks has, here's another pen that I used in the article, yes, fallen into hot water with regard to some unfair labor allegations. This is true. As a national corporation, but that is sort of getting it backwards. Because, again, as I say in the article, if Starbucks is in the wrong for denying workers the freedom to pursue their preferred mode of organization, bureaucrats and big labor, these mega unions that don't represent the interests of these specific workers, why are bureaucrats and big labor in the right for doing the same thing of which they are accusing Starbucks?
This is one of the things that bothers me about unions, is that there seems to be an automatic baseline assumption that whatever they do, their motives are pure and for the worker, and they wouldn't be greedy and they wouldn't be corrupt. But anything that the corporation does is always out of greed and corruption. And I think that that's a pretty unfair baseline to set for them, because these are just human beings also. And for the workers to want to leave the union or decertify, and for the NLRB to come in and say that they can't do it, it makes me think they're probably just working on behalf of their friends that run Workers United. Is that the case?
I mean, I don't know personally what's going on at Workers United. I don't know personally what's going on at Starbucks. But I will say, in my own experience with unions, and I've had some close experience with unions, it is really difficult for a giant conglomerate union. Unions have effectively become what they accused, and in many cases rightly initially, those big corporations of the past, of being those big exploitative corporations, mega conglomerates of being, when unions first took shape in the U.S. They need to adopt those same modes, and they also need to convince the public that that's what the corporate entity still looks like. It's not. Fortunately, workers are becoming much more independent and much more powerful in many, many industries. Things are happening that wouldn't have been conceivable back when unions first took shape in the U.S. Your people get hired because of their individual skills, personalities, and people are increasingly able to be self-employed. People are able to be their own boss. This is something that unions should embrace. But because unions have a very stagnant, entrenched business model, really, they rely on convincing the public and convincing workers that workers are victims, that people's 9-to-5 is a 9-to-5 and can't be something that gives them fulfillment and meaning. The only way they can find fulfillment and meaning in that 9-to-5 is in organized labor, is in retaliating against their employer. And so they have to fight back against self-employment. They have to fight back against all of these ways that workers can be independent and can be valued for who they are as people and be valued for their values. For me, it is one of the hugest problems that contributes to some of the most toxic incentive, you know, misalignments in our policy today.
It's interesting because on one hand, they could say, well, you're not going to get that fulfillment from a 9-to-5 working for the man. They're taking advantage of you. But then on the other, they also go after gig workers or freelance workers or people who want to be self-employed. And it seems like their answer, coincidentally, is that the only way you're going to find this is if you're part of this collective union and they're collectively right. bargaining, which is a convenient position for them to have.
Well, and if you look at many of the, in particular, California policies or attempted policies, these are policies that kind of try to structure. And in New York, it's the same way. And I think that the PRO Act kind of looks a little bit like this, too. Tries to make self-employment and independent contracting increasingly into a 9-to-5 type gig. And this is for people who want, again, this was a pun I wrote in an Uber article, want an exit ramp from corporate life, want an exit ramp maybe from union politics. And, you know, if workers want to unionize, let's say that the Starbucks workers do want to unionize. They just don't want to be represented by Workers United. Maybe they want to have a smaller union. Maybe they want to have a more compact, more individualized union. They should be able to do that. And right now, because of these weird policy changes, these prefer and these give preference to and advantages to big unions, big labor, just like policies of the past would give preference to big corporations.
I do have to take a second just to point out a pun that I think, honestly, it was missed that you need to add back in. And Magoo asked if the problem was grande, venti, or large. What size problem would you say this is?
this is a double shot extra... extra whip foam. I got foam in there. I did get a retweet where someone said this is a venti problem. So according to someone on Twitter, it's a venti problem.
All right, there were two different directions I was considering going. One thing I've talked about for a while is that people need to find a way to find meaning and purpose in the jobs that they have. And something we've talked about for a while, that whatever job that you name in a free market society, if as long as you're not working for the government on stolen money, you are providing value to someone that they think is more valuable than the money that they have. And whatever that thing is, you should find meaning and fulfillment in that, because mm-hmm. you provided a service or a product to someone. Whether you're working at McDonald's or Starbucks, whatever the job is, that person needed food or they needed expensive coffee, and you should be able to find some type of meaning in doing that job. I don't know. Do you think that's something that's missing right now for people?
People convince themselves that it's missing for them. And I think in some industries it is, in some jobs it is. For me, I actually really always loved food service, and I miss working in food service. I have loved it every single time, including the grind, including the parts that food service workers commiserate about. I've always loved it. And there is dignity in all work. Unfortunately, yes, there are always employers who do not treat their workers fairly in any number of ways. These are individual problems. These are problems that are specific to a corporation, or they're problems specific to a particular relationship between a specific employer and a specific employee. And these need to be addressed on a very individual level for the most part. Again, I'm not sure if I'm a great representative of the uber libertarian position, because I do see a place for organized labor, but my sense of what that would look like is incredibly holistic and it's incredibly individualized. I don't think it should be forced on people. And I think that a lot of problems that in the past could only be resolved through labor organization are in fact better resolved through individual or small group actions.
Yeah, I basically have that same position. I think people should be able to join unions, and I think that's fine. I don't think they should be forced to join the unions. And then my next step is that if you want to fire people, and that means that you fire all the unionized people, I think that you should also be able to do that if you have employees that will come in and replace them. Why would you not be able to do that? If enough people have joined that union and you only have workers in the union pool to pull from, then that's something you have to deal with in that market, that those workers have voluntarily agreed to join and do that. But none of it should be forced.
I think, honestly, we're getting to the point where there are fewer and fewer risks with that take, again, because of the rise of the gig economy, because of the increased possibilities of independent work. It's always a cost-benefit analysis. And I certainly think employers should have more freedom than they do today to decide, what am I cool with in terms of my workers organizing, what am I not. When I look at the worker side, and that's really where I try to focus, I think workers should have much more freedom in terms of what they decide with respect to their unions. Right to work is a great concept. A lot of times it's conceptual only. These policies are being weaponized explicitly by unions against employees' right to work. So on paper, employees can have the right to work, the right to be part of a union, the right to leave a union. But if you're able to be backed into a corner once a union takes shape at your corporation, you don't really have the right to work in that traditional sense that we typically use the phrase. You're part of the union. You're tied into it.
I wanted to bring up two things that we talked about yesterday, because we just did our union episode yesterday. I wanted to get your thoughts on them real quick. One of them had to do with the yellow trucking company who has filed for bankruptcy. They've been around for 100 years now. They pointed to the union being one of the main reasons that they ended up having to file for bankruptcy. They did take a $700 million loan during the COVID pandemic to keep their business going, but that involved them trying to restructure their company, and they weren't able to restructure their company because that involved firing people and decreasing hours. Essentially, the union blocked them from doing their restructuring. The other thing was the United Auto Workers right now are currently asking for what equates to a 46% pay raise for the UAW workers for the big three auto companies.
Yes.
And they are citing the CEO's 40% pay raise as reason that the workers should also get the same raise. And of course, you know that drives me nuts because they're using...
How many CEOs do they have?
Three.
And how many individual employees do they have?
There are, well, just for GM, they have 167,000 employees. And then you go to Ford and you have Chrysler. Also, you're talking 300,000 employees. Yes, I know where you're going. This increase would cost those companies upwards of $2 to $3 billion. And the increase for the CEOs was somewhere around $30 million. The math don't
add
up. But now we're at this point where we're using the same Bernie Sanders CEO pay raise argument, and it's made it all the way up to the president of the UAW union. This is driving me nuts.
UAW comprises a really, really counterintuitive and kind of random set of workers. If I'm not mistaken, UAW was helping, I believe UAW was helping to lead negotiations during the University of California grad students strike.
I think you're right on that. Pretty sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Not exactly the same type of area, but okay. Yeah. This doesn't really make sense. And in particular, I think UAW knows that this is not sensical. This is not logical. These are tactics designed to get public attention. And unfortunately, they can give false hope to employees. They can be deceptive toward employees. And for employees that say, I don't want to strike, it can really, really put them in a difficult bind. And it puts a lot of people in an untenable position, all because of publicity stunts, bargaining demands. And it's really unfair. It is one of the most deceptive things, unfortunately.
It ties back to something you said when we first started. An issue I see with this is that it leaves the workers in a constant state of never feeling satisfied, even if they get a 20% pay raise out of this negotiation. Well, they wanted what equated to a 46% pay raise. They're trying to go to a 32-hour work week instead of a 40-hour work week. And even if there are negotiations and there's concessions on this, the workers have been thinking that they were going to get this initial bargaining chip that they used. And now even if they get what it ends up being a pretty sweet deal, they're never happy.
And it was the same story.
It was a constant state of wanting more all the time.
It was the same story.
Yeah.
And that's what perpetuates their business model. They will, you know, you and not to pick on, well, maybe a little bit to pick on UAW, but this is a common union tactic. This common big labor tactic, I will say, I'll distinguish. Promise the moon. And make sure that it's a promise that can't quite be delivered on, so that then workers will say, oh, we almost got it. We almost got it. And these big corporations, these blackleggers, whatever, made it so that we only got half of what we were entitled to, and we need to continue, with this union because it's our only hope, it's our only way out. It's like an abusive relationship. Mm-hmm. I can't stress enough how much it is like the big corporations, especially of the past. The old entrenched, the old ossified corporate model that unfortunately is really going out of style and people are rejecting it. Unions can't abide by that. They're practicing those same tactics. They need to convince you that so are businesses.
Mm-hmm. And it also, see, I see unions as small governments or big governments in some cases, because another way that this works out for them is they make these big promises. They only get half of it. And then how do we make sure we get all of it next time? You should probably give the union more power. You might want to give them more dues. They probably needed a little bit more lobbying money. They probably needed a little bit more bargaining power. And next time, they'll be able to get everything that you're entitled to. And they never quite get it, except for they continue to get more and more power. And like a government, it works out for them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you see this bureaucratic capture, right? You see, it's interesting. Corporations used to be the bad actors in bureaucratic capture, and to an extent they still are. But in this particular case, you've got unions that have captured the NLRB, and that are essentially making it so that policies serve them, not the individual worker. And that is the problem. This is not about wanting to make sure that workers stay put down or workers stay in their place. This is wanting to make sure that workers can be lifted up. And it's now unions that are doing what the big bosses of the past used to do.
All right. Unfortunately, we do have to wrap up. I know it's kind of a short episode, but to be fair, it was your fault.
It was my fire alarm's fault, and there's audio evidence of that.
There is. We played it for the live group, the Fed Haters Club, at joingml.com, just so I can get that little advertisement in there for everyone. But why don't you tell everyone where they can find more of your stuff, where they can follow, any random thoughts that you have, where they can go to see those?
You can find me on Twitter at AjaxTheGriff, and you can also find my work at Young Voices, where I've got a page there, and you can follow all of my latest hits and updates there.
All right, Amanda, it's been fun. Next time we'll do a full-length episode. We'll just make sure that you won't have any fire drills just beforehand. And we still need you to come back and talk about this presidential race that we have coming up, because
love to, man.
It's heating up, and well, honestly, it's heated up to the point where I've stopped paying attention to it because it's too annoying to pay attention to anything. But
I'll give you a little teaser. Mm-hmm. I have always been a closet Chris Christie fan in some respects. Not that I agree with every single one of his policies, but I've always had a secret soft spot for Chris Christie.
We'll have to dig into that just a little bit more. There you go. Everyone's got just a little teaser. We'll come back and figure out what the heck it is about Chris Christie that makes you like it.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
Anytime, any place, anywhere, radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
U.S. USA News Update. The Biden administration is seeking to help lower prescription prices for older Americans on Medicare. President Biden made the announcement Tuesday.
You're paying 2 to 3 times more for the exact same prescription manufactured by the exact same company that it would cost you in Canada or France or anywhere else around the world.
Negotiations on prices will begin this fall, and prices are expected to take effect in 2026. The prescription drugs include those that treat heart failure, blood clots, diabetes, and other illnesses. He says no Republicans voted for the measure. The search for human remains in Lahaina is now 99% complete. The waters and coastline still need to be fully searched. Divers from the Maui Fire Department, Navy, and Coast Guard are searching the waters off Lahaina. The death toll remains at 115, exactly 3 weeks after the fire, but hundreds are still considered missing. I'm Ryan Daniels, USA News.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. ShopSuperTea.com.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
What's up? This is Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network. Our friend David McGarry is hanging out with us, and we're going to talk about unions. David, how are you doing?
Howdy, folks. I'm very glad to be here, and I'm doing very well.
I do want to get into a couple of the pieces that you've got out right now. And I told you I was interested in the one about Adam Smith and workers' freedoms. I'm always interested in who's going to protect the worker and how they are going to have their power versus the evil big corporations. You got a great piece in the American Institute for Economic Research. Why don't you tell people what the gist of that is?
Yeah, so I was going back in reading through Wealth of Nations, and Adam Smith has a incredibly eloquent denunciation of the sorts of barriers that government partnerships with big labor put on workers' freedoms. And as he points out, also on would-be employers' freedoms, because whenever there's a contract, obviously there's two parties. And Smith really lays out how back in ye old guild times when you had all of these guilds in Western Europe, they managed to do things. It was basically occupational licensing at its worst. So they would limit who could participate in various occupations. They would limit the number of apprentices that the guilds or that masters could take on to artificially limit the supply of workers in their field. So, for example, he has a great line where he basically says that the silk weavers of London took scarcely a year to institute all of these restrictions after they were incorporated. Guilds also, I mean, honestly, they were far worse than unions today. considering the fact that they would have all sorts of trade quotas, they would have output quotas, they would squash new technologies, because if you came up with a way to more efficiently do whatever task you're trying to do, that could lower prices. And God knows that we wouldn't want to lower prices and lower the guild's profits. And Smith really lays out the moral foundation for all of this, or I should say against all of this, that workers ought to be able to go and make the most of their own personal talents and their own opportunities, and that this freedom really functions to the good of all of society. Smith has a really important conception of the foundation of prosperity being a division of labor, because when I'm doing one thing, I can put all of my efforts towards that one thing, and when you're doing another, you can do the same, and then we're able to basically supply one another's needs through systems of specialization and then through trade. And this is a really important way of looking at capitalism, looking at markets, being that each participant is doing a fundamental moral good by chasing profits, because what that really means is that each participant is providing very necessary goods and services to the people in their communities and to the world at large.
Yeah, that's really something that people have a hard time with these days, is the notion that profit is actually a good thing. When we hear people making a lot of profits these days, for a lot of people, especially on the left, but even some on the right, that can be equated with theft. But profit does mean that you provided that value in society. And if you think that someone has a monopoly and that's why they're profiting, well, maybe you want to have more competition. And there's something that you mentioned earlier. It's, you know, one thing I think unions really get wrong is that they do hurt competition by making it harder for businesses to come into the market. And one of the greatest things for a worker is to have other options. That would naturally make those businesses want to treat the workers better, right? But they seem to kind of take their chips down and just want to control that one location and never think about the one that could offer them a better life or a better salary, right?
You make a wonderful point. Unions are nothing if not inflexible. Flexibility is a really great thing in any market, because it allows people to essentially purchase a good or negotiate incrementally in a way that benefits them. And whenever you have any organization, whether it's a union, whether it's a government, or frankly, whether it's a big, bloated, oversized corporation that comes in and tries to impose one-size-fits-all rules, you get problems, you get inefficiencies. Now, the good news is that for private sector unions, not counting their special little handouts from government, but theoretically, private sector unions and corporations can then be undermined by competition. But obviously, the government has a monopoly on force, and the government isn't going anywhere. So whenever the government gets involved, the huge difference is that there's no opportunity for an incumbent to come in and challenge that market share.
You mentioned in the piece, you mentioned California's AB5. People on the show that listen probably sick of me mentioning the PRO Act, but it is what I think the scariest and worst piece of legislation that I've seen in a long time. Is that really to help the workers, or are there just special interests that are involved in this that don't like the fact that people can be independent contractors and skip out on those unions and make their own way? Like, what's the reasoning behind ideas like this?
Well, it's to help workers, but just like the guild system that Smith wrote about, it's about a very specific small group of workers that are either in the guild or today in the union. Things like the PRO Act and going back to California's AB5 law, the primary beneficiary of those are is the unionized labor, which cannot be competed with under the provision of these proposals or these laws, right? Because if you say, okay, X, Y, or Z worker is no longer allowed to work as an independent contractor, that forecloses an avenue of competition that could have undermined unions' power. Functionally, this is to protect the minority of workers, but then, of course, you go back to the fact that too many politicians have too many financial interests all tied up with unions, which is really something we don't talk about when we complain about campaign financing.
Mm. We could make the argument that at one point in time, unions were necessary, I guess. A lot of people make that argument. Maybe you will as well. Are they necessary now?
Well, I don't think that the public policy question is about whether or not they're necessary. I am for the abolishment of all public sector unions. However, in the private sector, part of being a free market kind of person is that you believe that folks are allowed to coordinate as they so choose. However, the problem comes when government starts entrenching the power of unions and tipping the scale towards big labor, because at that point you no longer have workers who are free to operate outside of the union system, or maybe workers are less free to operate outside of the union system, and to ditch unions when they start to harm the market, harm workers, harm companies. And so, like I said, the problem really comes back to when the government is getting involved.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think you should be able to start a union with your friends if you want to. I just want the business to be allowed to fire you if they want to. And that's the way that the market should work, in my opinion. Now, have you seen some of the recent negotiations that have taken place? Just one more thing on unions with, say, UPS and then the new ones with UAW right now where they're asking for these big pay raises. Are you worried like I am about the inflation that can ripple through the economy when you have all of these things asking for these massive pay raises? It's great for them at first, and then I worry about what happens when the market catches up afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, I'm more worried about the workforce ramifications than the inflationary ramifications of these things. But along the lines of what you were saying, actually, Amanda had a wonderful piece that came out recently that's showing how the federal government is really intervening to stop unionized workers from leaving their unions. Again, this is just another example of how it's not actually a fair playing field in too many ways, in too many instances these days.
Yeah, I completely agree. I want to shift over now to, let's shift over to protecting children online. I know you've already talked about that today, but I did want to ask you your thoughts on the proposal for the Digital Consumer Protection Commission, or the DCPC. Elizabeth Warren, along with Lindsey Graham, pushing for a new agency to protect us from these unelected big technocrats out there by installing a new agency of unelected people to control them. What are your thoughts on this? And then what did you talk about earlier today when it comes to protecting children online?
Right. So the overall issue with a lot of these bills to, I don't know, sanitize the internet, for lack of a better phrase, is that they treat the internet as if it's not part of real life and as if you can put in place all sorts of unconstitutional violations or maybe all sorts of regulations that will stifle creativity and innovation, economic prosperity. Again, as if the internet works by different rules than real life does. But no, I mean, economics still applies and the Constitution still applies online. In regards to the commission, first of all, Republicans should be very wary whenever they find themselves agreeing with Elizabeth Warren. I would suggest that the argument for this commission, that is, that we need to regulate the internet as we regulated, is the FCC regulated or as authorities regulated the nuclear industry. I would argue that rationale is sort of self-defeating, considering the fact that especially until the 90s, the FCC created all sorts of government-supported monopolies. And I think we all know that the regulatory burdens that we put on the nuclear industry has really done great harm to America's energy sector and to all these things like innovation and growth and economic dynamism, et cetera. So I really don't think that there's any meaningful argument for these proposals except for a short-term fear-mongering mindset, which, while I think it does identify some limited concerns with the internet, has the solutions all wrong.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Sometimes we're faced with a crossroads in life and we don't really know which path to take. Maybe you're thinking about a career change or feeling like your relationship needs a little love. Whatever it is, therapy can help you map out your future and trust yourself to find a way forward. I've done therapy in the past, and honestly, it helped me quite a lot. Changed my life, made me who I am today. And our co-host, Charlie, he's still using BetterHelp to this day. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Let therapy be your map with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GML today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GML. Does the government have any business trying to protect children's activity online? Say that the predator is on there, there's the targeted advertising that they're worried about. Could be a really dangerous place, I guess, for kids. Is that their business, or is this more of a parenting issue?
The answer is a little bit of both. And we've actually seen some proposals from folks like Ron Wyden to basically up enforcement of actual federal laws against criminal conduct against children online. But for a lot of the more popular conversations that we're having that are really capturing the hearts and minds of statists both on the left and the right, the solution to your child finding things on social media is for you to parent your child better. There's a lot of talk of parental rights and less talk of parental responsibilities. There are also increasing numbers of tools, of content tools that parents can use. And these tools, by the way, are being provided by the very big tech companies that we all love to hate on. But it's parents' responsibility to involve themselves and to help their children navigate these spaces in a safe way. And as I said, there are market-provided tools that help parents limit screen time, that help parents limit the content their children will find. And it is a very dangerous place we get into when we try to force the government into this, into these issues that are best solved by the private sector and by the family.
So is it that the government wants to take control of these industries or and do this regulation, or is it that parents are actually just, you know, kind of being lazy with their responsibilities and it's these great people in the government want to come in and help them? Like, where does the problem start first here?
Yeah, so parents certainly must do more. We as a society obviously are still very much adjusting to how to cope with the digital world, because this technology has, I mean, let's be honest, it's been in some ways greatly destabilizing. So yes, parents need to catch up and start doing more, and I really hope that more and more parents will do so. However, at the same time, when we look at many folks, and unfortunately in both parties, there is a definite tendency to want to come in and force the government's conception of good parenting onto parents. As Antonin Scalia wrote in a really great Supreme Court opinion years back, which was about a California attempt to bar minors from accessing violent video games. And what Scalia said is that for all of the rhetoric to the contrary, what it comes down to is that these sorts of laws are trying to force the government's conception of what should be in the guise of saying that they're empowering parents, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's very important to remember that, unfortunately, for better or for worse, parents are making a choice right now, or many parents right now are making a choice not to parent their children. Again, that is a, you can say it's out of laziness, you can say it's out of ignorance, whatever, but that is still a parenting choice to allow their children to access all sorts of websites, applications, content, you name it. But that affirmative choice, again, or even if it's a passive choice, it must be changed by the parents. It is their job to raise their children in the online space the same way that is their job to raise their children in the so-called real world. And I think it's a really dangerous place for people who have libertarian tendencies. I think it's very dangerous for libertarians and libertarian adjacent types to say suddenly that the government can get this involved in micromanaging family life after it has spent so long eloquently and correctly making the arguments of why that is a bad idea.
Have you been getting ads for this thing called Project Liberty Action Network? Have you seen anything about that at all?
I haven't. Tell me about it.
Okay. I was going to see if I could share my screen to you. I got this ad and I didn't really know what it was. It has to do with social media. It has to do with big tech. And let me just share this. And maybe this would be cool to talk about. Let me pick this. Yep. There we go. We'll share that. And now I can add that screen. Okay. That's cool. All right. Project Liberty Action Network. This shows up in my feed on X. Let me see if there's sound too.
We the web, living our lives online, while social media profits with no regard for us. Let's overthrow social media tyrants. There is a solution. Join us. Let's lead the way.
Okay, so we got that. They start with I saw the we, and of course it's written, you know, like we the people, and it's we the web. I go to the website, Project Liberty. This has got to be good. I don't know what we're going to do here. Maybe it has to do with big tech censorship. They're censoring people's opinions online, right? It all has to do. Project Liberty Action Network is a movement to build a better web that serves our communities. The Kids Online Safety Act. contact your senators and ask them to pass the Kids Online Safety Act. Medical experts, parents, and youth themselves agree. Social media is fueling a mental crisis. And then this is an ad for the Kids Online Safety Act, the entire thing. So that's what's going on. Oh, I didn't realize it wasn't sharing the other pages I was going to. I thought I was going to share the entire screen. My bad. That would have been better if it was actually sharing to you the whole thing I was looking at. But anyway, I thought maybe that would be an ad you were getting since you're following this stuff and writing about it all the time.
Yeah, I like to avoid being too glib about people's concerns about the internet because I think a lot of them have value and or at least they come from a valid place. However, whenever I see things like this, I have a hard time keeping my eyes from rolling fully back in my head. First off, if again, just to apply our basic economic knowledge, if social media companies were providing no one any value, then for what reason have all of these platforms obtained so many consumers' dollars and all this ad revenue? So that's my first question. And second off is for their support for the Kids Online Safety Act. They say that they want to build a better internet. And as we know, again, from offline economics, what is a better way to entrench monopolies and to protect incumbents besides getting the government into the business of adding layers upon layers of burdensome regulation that prevent innovation and prevent startups from entering the market? So I think that not only is there all sorts of imprecise and just fear-mongering language here that is disingenuous and distorts the full picture of what online life is like, but it also, their message is completely self-defeating, and I have such little patience for this kind of rhetoric, especially because I actually think that we do need more competition online. I don't think the government should be the one in charge of creating it, but I think unquestionably we want a dynamic, innovative market where you are seeing new companies, new platforms, new products that are coming in response to demand and coming in to fix and improve upon the models that have come before and to provide better products to consumers.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that, you know, I've got something up on the screen again where it talks about parents worrying about their children and the use of technology. Why does that take the Kids Online Safety Act to fix something when you're worried about your kids' use of technology? You're the parent. Limit their use of technology. That it's on you to do it. They're worried about they're going to do it for their kid, but their friend's parents, their kid's friend's parents aren't going to do it for them, and then they're going to look bad. So they want everyone to have the same limitations on their technology, I guess.
Well, I think that's actually a really important point, is that because it's impossible to know a person's age before verifying that age, proposals like this don't only affect the internet for kids. You can't, I mean, really effectively, you can't just make kids pinky promise that, for example, for net, as of today, you know, they're over 13. We've all seen that, right? Just having kids pinky promise and click the OK button doesn't actually do the trick. So you have to, number one, verify all users' age online, which has all sorts of privacy and data dissemination concerns. And then also for the ways that bills like the Kids Online Safety Act, bills like California's Age Appropriate Design Code, for the way that they purport to mold a child-safe internet, they're really creating a child-safe, sanitized internet for all, and that is a huge problem that more people don't actually deal with.
I've never heard anyone mention that before. That's a really great point. I like that. Making a child-safe internet for all, which sounds terrible. Honestly, I don't know. Maybe that's what we deserve. Maybe that's the internet that our society deserves these days. I don't know how we've done with this one. You know, I agree that social media, I guess it's been a net positive, I guess. But, man, there's a lot of bad stuff. There's a lot of negativity that we're all carrying all the time that we really shouldn't. And we talk about how, well, it's great, you can keep up with your family and all that. I'm like, okay, that's like 0.1% of my time on social media. Probably the rest of it is throwing more hate into the world, I guess. So I don't know. I want to ask you, I guess, as the last question, has it been a net positive for us?
I think it has. And I think that a lot of the very real negatives that it has introduced, I think we're in the process of working through those things. Social media is a very new technology. If we take a responsible historical view, I mean, how long has it been since we really had social media? I mean, 10, 15, 20 years? This is a transformational, world-shifting technology that we're dealing with. And as a society, we have to figure out how to compensate for that. The same way that there was incredible destabilization introduced by the Industrial Revolution. It produced all sorts of chaos. It largely produced, or at least fed the fires of socialism and Marxism, which we are still dealing with today. And I don't think that is an argument, though, that we should go back and deindustrialize the world, nor do I think we should try to go back and end the internet. And honestly, a lot of these concerns, again, while I think they are reacting to real harms, a lot of the extreme way with which they're expressed, for example, in that ad, is really reminiscent of concerns that people had about basic democratic governance. And I certainly don't think that we should go back and start advocating monarchy. So real problems, yes. Do parents need to take more responsibility? Yes. Are there things that government can do at the margins to properly chase after lawbreakers and other sorts of wrongdoers online? Yes. However, let's take a forward-looking view towards this that respects liberty and free markets and all of the other principles that we as libertarian and libertarian adjacent folks say we love, and let's go from there.
All right, David, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure as always. Why don't you let everyone know where they can go to find more of your work?
Yeah, go on Twitter, find me at David B. McGarry, and you can find all of my writing and also some other random things that I think of, including some pretty nasty commentary about Major League Baseball's umpiring crew right now.
All right, folks, when we come back, we're going to go through some dumb tweets and more on Liberty at Night.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the mineral doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
Looking for that edge during those intimate moments? We see many ads for enhancement, but the side effects include death. At GCN Team, we should change the Healthy Body Brain and Heart Pack to the Healthy Libido Pack. The brain and heart are not the only organs that require a healthy vascular system. For proper blood flow at the right moment, go to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.